I want to tell you about a new podcast called Amuse News. Publishing multiple days a week, Amuse News is your source for food news, interviews from around the food world, and more. On the show, we'll be engaging with food storytellers, from chefs to advocates to people working in the field, and many more. Find Amuse News wherever you get your podcasts. Amuse News is a destination for everyone who's looking for a new, insightful look into the world of food.
Today's program was brought to you by Union Beer. For more information, visit greatbrewers.com.
Hi, this is Celia Kutcher, host of Animal Instinct, and you are listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Welcome to
Foment About It
on HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
I'm Mary Izette.
And I'm Chris Kuzmi.
And we're your co-host of this weekly journey of all things fermented.
Archived on Stitcher, iTunes, and right here on HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
All right, welcome. We're get through some announcements first. So first, a local New York City announcement. Pride of Brooklyn Homebrewing Competition and Expo will take place on Saturday, April 20th. Ooh, that is not correct.
April 25th. Yep. It will be Saturday, April 25th, and it is going to encompass or have about 25 different homebrewers, local homebrewers, some very good homebrewers. There will be a people's choice and the judging. It's a competition, an open competition. Public tickets are up for sale. Where?
It's going to be, well, it's better if you just go to their Facebook page, Pride of Brooklyn Homebrew Fest. And we will actually tweet the ticket link. But it's going to be at Littlefield, which is on DeGraw Street in Brooklyn.
And we will see you there. I have the pleasure of being a judge. Or pleasure or curse of being a judge.
So I was all set up and then I realized I was looking at a page from 2013. Ah! Anyway. Then there's two pretty cool beer-related Kickstarters that are going on right now. The first is called Drink Tanks. DRINKTANKS, and they're offering the world's largest growler and personal keg, and they actually way overshot their goal, which is absolutely awesome. I think it's an awesome product, and I'm actually am going to pledge for two of these suckers. So they have 3 days to go. This is your time to get in and be an early adopter. So they're basically these 1 gallon growler slash kegulators, and they're great.
Stainless steel, right?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So if you look up, just search Drink Tanks, DRINKTANKS on Kickstarter, and you will find it. So it's an easy way to carbonate your own beer if you are, you know, doing smaller batches or you just want to take a small portion, like a gallon of your beer somewhere, or also a really great way to keep your beer fresh. The second is KitLab. So KitLab is a site where anyone can buy and sell beer kits. KitLab packs and ships the kits, and authors share in the profits. So the way this works, it's already going. I guess there's a version kind of already going, but it's going to be an online marketplace where brewers, pro brewers, home brewers, whoever, can upload your recipes and sell as made-to-order beer kits. Whenever one of those kits sells online, KitLab will pack and ship the kit and split the profits with you as the recipe author. So this is by a guy named Ryan Sanders, and this is also a very cool. He just started this. He has 25 days to go, and he has not yet reached his goal. So definitely check that out as well. And that is, again, KitLab, K-I-T space L-A-B on Kickstarter. We'll send both those out as tweets probably just after the show concludes tonight.
What is your Twitter handle, Mary?
At FomentAboutIt.
With a D. Don't be a tit. Write it with a dit.
God.
Thank you very much.
Kuzma, you seem to have some announcements.
I do have an announcement. I'm very excited. It's a very exciting day tomorrow. Tomorrow is National Beer Day here in the United States. Before we get into what that is, our friend, Chris Bradley, is launching his show Destination Beer. And Destination Beer Show on his YouTube channel. YouTube.com/ Destination Beer Show. And this is basically a new travel and cooking reality show with great beer as the main ingredient. Chris is a really great guy and does a lot of amazing beer stuff. Great beer advocate, great friend. And I'm really, really, really looking forward to the show. The pilot episode is going to feature Deschutes Brewery in Bend, Oregon. And I can't wait to see what happens with that. But tomorrow is April 7th, National Beer Day. It's an unofficial holiday in the United States celebrated every year, and it celebrates the ability to buy, sell, and drink beer for the first time in 13 years. Celebration of the Cullen Harrison Act being signed into law by President Franklin T. Roosevelt in 1933. And that's what I have to say. Oh, so that law went into effect, allowing people to buy, sell, and drink beer again as long as it was less than 3.2%, 4% ABV.
Chris, how are you planning on celebrating National Beer Day?
I'm going to drink a lot of beer tomorrow. And it's all going to be under 3.2%, as long as I can find it. It shouldn't be too hard.
Now, there's some that are come close to that. We should have made our own, dude. What were we thinking?
No. We failed.
So let's talk about kind of, now that I am fully recovered from, some of you know who have been listening to us for a while, that I wrote a book last year on fast fermented alcoholic beverages called Speed Brewing. It's out in June. I'm super excited. But I did experience some fermentation burnout after the conclusion of that book. And now that I am fully over it and the weather is turning nice and our apartment is not 50 degrees anymore, I am back on a fermentation rampage. So I'm playing with fermented grains primarily right now. We've been doing sourdough for a while. I'm obsessed with these easy sourdough crackers. Mm-hmm. I've made like 5 batches in the last week.
Mm-hmm.
I did successfully made raisin water bread. So I used organic raisins and basically made a starter with organic raisins and water. And I made 2 loaves of bread from that last week. And then,
so all you do is get raisins, throw it in water?
Yep.
And it just goes?
Yep. You can find some recipes online. I think, I'm trying to remember, I actually used the recipe from Peter Reinhardt's new book, Bread Revolution. But it's about 1/4 cup of raisins. Just cover that with enough filtered water, spring water, you know, no chlorine. And let it go. You want to kind of jiggle it around. So swish it around. Like, don't put your cap on too tight. Kind of swish it around. Get some aeration in there or some activity every 8 hours or so, maybe like 3 times a day. And then maybe on the 3rd day, I added a little bit more water. So I'm just doing this in like a wide mouth mason jar. I think a pint size. And it's going to get fizzy and kind of active. The raisins will start floating, and then it'll get like a white layer on top. And it kind of looks like if you're a brewer's out there and you brew sours, like a lactobacillus pellicle, basically, to me. So it's kind of just a white layer. So then just strain that out. At that point, it's ready. So just strain it off. You know, make sure it smells good. If it smells really gross, don't use it. Strain that off. I just added it to flour and more water and made a starter and then made a bread just as I would from traditional sourdough starter. But it's cool and it worked great and it's really tastes nice.
I would have to agree.
And then I made pizza dough from it last night, so we'll see how that goes. I just made the pizza dough and put it in the fridge. We haven't made pizza with it yet. The other thing.
Now I know what I'm having with my beer tomorrow.
Pizza. Handmade raisin water pizza. Absolutely.
On National Beer Day. Yes. By the way, with tomorrow being National Beer Day, today is New Beer's Eve. So happy New Beer's Eve, everybody.
Happy New Beer's Eve. and then the other thing that I have been playing with is we made a batch of dosas this weekend, which were made of red lentils and brown rice. And this was all inspired by a fantastic workshop done by Cheryl Passwater at the Fermentation Festival here. And welcome, Cheryl.
Cheryl Passwater.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So let's start with, who are you? Tell us a little bit about yourself.
I'm Cheryl Passwater.
Need
I say more? No. I am an artist, more formally trained, and then I'll say certified fermentationist and gut ecologist.
Nice.
Awesome.
And a little side fact, you played bass in a punk band for 3 years somewhere along the line.
True story.
Did good stuff.
So what got you into fermenting?
I got into fermenting a few years ago. I kind of through a series of events, I in my early 30s just became very sick and ill, and I was sick and ill for a long time, and kind of became a kind of health/food kind of nerd and started really researching things and started looking to fermentation, partially because I was just generally interested in it. I kind of love this idea of bacteria. And then eventually, I don't know, I was just sitting in my friend's dining room one day, and I just had this epiphany where I was like, you know, every culture in the world is eating these foods but us, but we're the sickest. Mm-hmm. And so there began my journey.
Awesome.
Yeah.
It's kind of crazy. It seems counterintuitive to the layman. There's not enough education on bacteria and how good it is for you or it can
right.
be for you. And, of course, everybody has a different body and treatment to it. And what you're used to doesn't always, you know, you don't always respond well.
Yeah, no, I mean.
To everything.
Yeah, exactly. It's, you know, I think we live in this culture where it's like pasteurization and anti this and, you know, the idea of growing something and it kind of being this weird, wild, you know, thing.
Right.
And then we're ingesting it. It's something that people get really alarmed about.
And I think part of that is because people, I mean, a lot of our society is eating things on a mass-produced scale. And a lot of these fermented foods really shouldn't be made. They weren't meant to be made. I mean, fermentation was done in the home. It was done personally. And it's very easy to do, but it's something that we've all kind of forgotten.
Yeah, I was talking with somebody recently who was telling me about how he grew up in Turkey and, you know, he's like, no, my grandmother, my mother, like, they all have a, you know, massive bucket of, you know, yogurt sitting next to the fireplace that, you know, and every day they just kind of add some fresh raw milk to it. And every morning you go and you ladle out a big, you know, bowl of yogurt and you have it as part of your daily, you know, your daily routine. And, you know, same thing with sauerkraut and, you know, Germany and Austria and certain places around the world. And
kimchi in Korea.
Yeah. So something, yeah, I'm definitely very fascinated with. I love the idea of it.
And what did you kind of start with?
I started with kombucha, actually. I was subletting an apartment from this super cool chick named Laura, and you know, she has this big jar of, you know, kombucha sitting on her table, and I was like, oh, I've been really interested in fermentation and starting to ferment. So she gave me my first SCOBY and a kind of very basic kind of recipe, and then I just started kind of playing from there, and everything kind of spiraled out into a crazy snowball of I was hooked.
So tell us about, you have a project called Contraband Ferments, and it's basically a CSA, a community supported agriculture fermentation program. So tell us a little bit, what is Contraband Ferments? How did it start?
I think Contraband kind of stemmed out of a series of things. You know, I started fermenting and then I got really into it and then started giving ferments to friends because I was making more ferments than I could really personally digest safely, probably. And I was, at the time, I was doing some gut rehabilitation work for myself and just starting to study more gut and human microbiome type stuff. And so I started giving stuff to friends, and then the next thing I knew, friends were buying from me. And so originally I thought, oh, I'm just going to start selling kombucha. I'll start like this cool little groovy kombucha company. And then really fast kind of realized, I don't want to make just kombucha. I want to make all the things. And it's probably my artist brain to say, like, you know, I don't like too many.
Don't limit me, man.
Kind of. Yeah, just, I love the, you know, I really love the creativity of it. And I think it's a similar brain for me as art making in certain ways. And so, I started fermenting a lot. And then I kind of realized, like, you know, I think I want to, I don't know. I just had this really, one day I was just like, I think I want to name something Contraband Ferments. I think that would be an amazing name for kind of what I'm doing. And so, I was, you know, selling to a lot of friends, and I was like, you know what, I was trying to pay my way through school, and I needed to come up with a way to pay for this, like, in cash with, like, really expensive monthly payments. And so I started a fermentation CSA, sort of a, partially as a solution to being able to pay my way through school, but also just realizing, like, a lot of people were coming to me wanting ferments, and people were coming to me who, had digestive issues going on. And also for me, it was a way to stay creative and keep pushing myself as a fermenter.
Sure.
Coming up with new things and, you know, really, and also an outreach to my community. You know, we have a groovy, really groovy crew of people, and everybody's in it for different reasons. So it's just really, it's really fun.
And so when did you officially kind of launch, and how, were you working with a farm or...
We kind of, I guess, launched-ish like a year and a half ago. I just kind of started the CSA and didn't really look backwards. And we were collaborating with a farm a little bit in Long Island who's amazing, Garden of Eve. And we're not doing that right now just because, like, logistically it was becoming really hard taking people out to the farm and stuff. So the good majority of my fermenting is happening at home. Three of my friends and I, somebody in the neighborhood has kind of letting us use their yard. So we're actually planting a garden right now, and we're going to like be growing some of our own stuff for the CSA and for other projects. So.
Using local ingredients is a big focus of your CSA.
Local organic, as much like locally sourced, stuff as we can. And when we've done deliveries for things, like we always use like the Cargo Bike Collective, like we try to be as, eco and earth friendly as possible.
And then what are you guys, are you doing a different kind of featured ferment every month or a series?
Yeah, so the fermentation CSA, it runs 3 months at a time. So we ask people to just do 3 months just because we recognize like it's a little weird. You may or may not, you know. And it's a little bit more experimental. So you get everything from, you get 2 to 3 ferments every month. And it can vary from more traditional ferments like yogurt or, miso, kimchi, sauerkraut to more experimental stuff. We've done my fermented cookies. We've done, fermented nut cheeses, fermented hot sauce, amazake, yeah, tempeh. I try to really break it up into a variety of things. So it's a little bit something that you might, want to eat every day, a little bit of something that you're like, oh, this is kind of a cool, weird treat. And then, something else that kind of bridges the gap.
Cool. And we are going to take a break, but we'll be right back to hear more about what you've been fermenting. Hopefully you'll tell us a little bit more about your fermented cookies. I'm very intrigued. And then we're going to talk about some doses in Italy. So we'll be back after the break.
Ferment about it.
In 1996, L. Knife & Son acquired Union Beer Distributors, which was originally located on Union Avenue in Brooklyn, but has since expanded to its present location alongside the English Kills Canal in Williamsburg, Brooklyn. Union Beer has grown dramatically in the last decade as the primary distributor of Anheuser-Busch products for Kings County, Brooklyn, through the hiring and development of the best people in the industry. In 2003, Union Beer acquired a powerful catalog of specialty brands, which immediately positioned them as the craft beer supplier to accounts in Manhattan, Brooklyn, Queens, and Staten Island. Union perpetually tweaks their portfolio to maintain the highest level of stylistic breadth with the most coveted brands available. Through the highest possible level of service, outstanding salesmanship of the ultimate lineup of brands, and a paramount focus on education on all levels, Union Beer has solidified its position as the only source for the best selection of beers in the 14 counties of southeastern New York. For more information, visit greatbrewers.com.
This is Brandon Hoy, co-owner of Roberta's, and you're listening to heritageradionetwork.org.
Welcome back to Ferment About It. We are here in the studio with Cheryl Passwater of Contraband Ferments, who we met, well, actually we've known her for a while.
We met at Ferment 2 years ago.
But she was at the recent Ferment teaching a seminar on doses and idlis. What are doses and idlis?
Okay.
Go, Cheryl Passwater.
Enter cue, Cheryl. doses and idlis are basically a...
how do you spell it, idlis?
I-D-L-I-S.
Okay.
Idli.
Gotcha.
I know, I kind of add an extra syllable to it.
You're just clarifier.
Yeah, I think it's my Midwest roots or something. I've been told I pronounce words wrong a lot here. Yeah, so basically they're a traditional, illies are a more traditional kind of South Indian puffy cloud bread kind of cake patty thing that is made with fermented lentils and rice. And dosa is another variation, but it's more like a crepe kind of pancake-y, you know, kind of form. You know, that's also lentils and rice, but just a slightly different ferment.
Do tell.
Yeah, so
so it's a slightly different ferment. I mean, yeah, one was.
I mean, very similar, but just slightly different. In the case of Illy, it's fermented a little bit longer. Generally, a type of lentil or kind of mung bean, I guess, if you will, more formally, that you use might be different. In the case of example of Illy, as I did at ferment, and just my personal preference, actually have played with this a bit. I really like the red lentil, the kind of dal lentil, and then you can use, you know, brown or white rice. So I've been playing more with like white basmati rice, rice.
So what do you do to get it to ferment? What is this?
Well, take us
strip
through
it down.
Steps.
Yeah, take it through the steps. So basically, it's just a combination. It's like, you know, one part lentil to two parts rice, and you take it. You soak your grains overnight, which is great because we're kind of breaking down, you know, kind of these outer, you know, the outer barriers of the grains. So they're just more digestible and absorbable.
Room temperature overnight?
Yep. Soak them in room temperature. Usually I squeeze like half a lemon in there. Kind of helps break it down a little bit more. Lots of water.
You could use vinegar too, right?
You could use vinegar. Okay. Yeah. And then you don't even have to use those things. You could just soak it.
Sure.
And it's fine. Yeah, I usually throw a towel over it. You know, rubber band, keep any critters out.
Yeah.
And let it soak overnight. And then you actually, the next day, you could soak it up for 2 days, really. But what you want to do is you don't want to pour off that liquid. More traditionally, when you soak stuff, you just kind of, you know, strain off all that liquid. You actually don't want to do that in the case of Italy. And usually what I do is take kind of a strainer and I scoop out all the rice and, you know, lentils into a blender, and then you know, add sea salt. You don't want any iodized salt because it kills bacteria. We want to grow bacteria,
right?
And then usually I pour off some of the liquid, just enough to kind of like blend it up. You kind of want it to be almost like toothpaste kind of kind of consistency, or a little bit waterier than that, waterish. I don't know.
Kind of like waffle batter.
Yeah, kind of like waffle. Yeah, almost like a waffle batter. It'll be like a little bit coarse. There'll be a little bit of coarseness to it. And then, you know, you add sea salt, and then you use what's called an Italy steamer. So I guess if you're in like the New York.
Wait, then you let that ferment more?
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. Yes, I skipped a step.
Yep. Very easy to do.
Yeah, because it's not written down in front of me. and then you take the batter, you pour it back in the bowl, you cover it. You can let it hang out for another 24 to 48 hours. And then you'll kind of start to see it'll kind of start to rise up and puff up. So that's kind of how you know it's kind of working. And then you'll kind of get this pool of like red, kind of pink weirdness on it. And that's actually like hooch. So you just kind of mix it back in. You know, I always say like, you know, halfway through you can go and mix it up again if you really want to. I just usually let mine hang out, mix it back in. And then after it's fermented, I mean, it'll smell like a little weird. I feel like with some ferments, you know, it just smells kind of yeasty and yummy. And you're like, I definitely want to eat this. I feel like with Italy batter, it's a little like
garbagey
a little garbagey,
like touch to touch.
Yeah, just like it's a touch of you're like, I'm not sure. So it's okay, it's probably fine, you know, if there's not mold, like crazy black or red mold. Just if it's black or red mold, don't eat it. You know, blue mold, just scrape it off, it's probably fine.
I feel like it smells a little sulfury too, kind of. It's got,
yeah, it's like, just got a little like weird kind of twist to it where you're like, it smells yeasty. It's like fluffed up. There's this hooch on top, but just like a little tinge of like, I'm not, what is that? I can't quite, yeah, kind of garbagey smell.
But if it gets a pellicle of mold, of black or red mold, don't.
Black and red means dead.
Don't mix it back in.
Don't mix it back in.
Just dump that back. Start over.
Blue and green, white, just scrape it off. You're fine. I get these phone calls all the time and emails. And then, you know, you just basically mix it up and then you use what's called an Italy steamer, which you could get on Amazon. If you live in New York City area, you could go to like...
Kalustian's.
Thank
you. One of my favorite stores.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, the place is crazy.
Not the first time we mentioned that on this show.
Yeah.
Not the last.
Kalustian's is amazing. I went there for the first time actually with Barry Schwartz from Barry's Tempe.
Nice. So, he's great.
He's awesome. And I was just like, what? How did I go this long without knowing this was here? Yeah, it was great. But they have them at Kalustian's. I like to add other things into my batter. I know for men, I think we threw some coriander in the batter. Sometimes I mess with other things, you know, tinker. And then basically you just take the steamer tray. It comes apart in pieces and, you know, you can kind of coat it with ghee or coconut oil works really well. And basically you find, you know, a big pot that it'll fit in without putting too much water where it's going to flood the trays.
Right.
Excuse me. And then you just basically boil that little, you know, half inch.
Little layer of water.
A little layer of water.
So it's steaming.
Yep. Put the steamer in. Well, before you put the steamer in, you fill all the little trays. So like these little divots, they have like little holes in them. You're like, mm-hmm. I'm going to put this batter in here and is it going to fall through? And it does not. You fill them all and you stack them and you kind of screw it back together. You sit it inside this boiling water, put a lid on, and you just let them steam. And you'll see it, like, it'll kind of go from, like, this pinkish batter to, you know, or kind of gray, green, depending on what kind of lentils you use. And then it'll start to change color, and it'll just kind of go from, like, pink to kind of, like, white edges with, like, a pink middle. And then it just kind of starts to fluff up, and then they just look at, like, these just beautiful little white disc things. And then, I usually kind of just poke them with my finger to kind of, they bounce back kind of like sure. when you're cooking meat. Mm-hmm. And then, I think it kind of depends on how fast it steams kind of more based on like the size of your pot and stuff.
Sure. But then you have these idlis and how are they generally eaten or what are they eaten with?
Sambar. I like to make fermented chutneys with them. Like apple pear chutney that I've fermented or, a vegetable kind of more traditional, like onion kind of Indian chutney. Mm-hmm. So I really like to do it like that. A friend and I made them recently. We were eating them with strawberry jam.
Nice.
And, yeah, they were amazing. Her dogs were freaking out. Her like little dog, Gimbal. He's just, I like love that little dog. And for half an hour, 40 minutes after we were done making he was still sitting there looking at the pot. And I'm like, there's no more. And he would look at the pot. And like, it's gone. It's over. Yep. And he'd look right at the pot. He's like, I know there. And there were more in there. I'm like, he's like, I know there's more in there. Like, he would do any.
His nose doesn't do well.
Yeah, anything I wanted based on. Yeah, he was loving it.
So let's talk about doses.
Yes, please.
Because if people
I love
don't.
Me some doses.
I feel like doses are more common. They're easier to get. Or you see them more often.
Yeah,
at least, than idlis. At least in this country.
Yeah.
And also, you know, if somebody wants to try and they don't want to invest in an idli pan or get an extra piece, then doses you can make with just a pan or anything.
Yeah, skillet.
So what's the difference in, you kind of make them similarly, except that you rinse, you don't keep the water, right?
Right. So in the case of idli, you're keeping the water and using part of that water kind of as like an inoculant, right? You're kind of pouring it back in the blending process. With dosa, you don't need that water. So that's, you know, you don't have to worry about that part. And then,
so we start exactly the same way with the ferments.
Yeah, you do it the same way.
Soak the lentils, soak the rice.
Yeah, the fermentation process.
Same balance, two to one?
Same balance, 2-1. I believe so. I have to look at my notes.
I think that's how I made it.
I'm pretty sure, yeah. I think that's right. And then, it's basically the same process, a little bit less fermenting time. I soak it for a little bit less amount of time. And again, you can use any kind of lentil, you know, black lentils, I think they're like kind of more traditional variation. You kind of soak them until the skins come off and then you kind of scrape off all the skins and then you have this more like white batter. But I've used, you know, green lentils. I've used mung beans, which was really yummy. I've used red lentils for it also. So kind of any kind of bean variety in there works. And so you just, similar process to that at Italy. I usually soak it for less time. I usually ferment it for a little bit less time. And then, yeah, you can basically, I mean, I like my dosa. I eat it for breakfast a lot. I think I haven't, you know, I don't know if my dosa's as good as, like, if you go to Flushing and you, right. you know, get, like, dosa.
Or
oh
Jersey
God.
City.
Yeah.
Dosas are South Indian, and, yeah. and they eat them for breakfast and dinner or any time of the day.
Yeah, yeah. I love stuffing them with stuff. So, you know, I know, like, at Ferment when we did it, we just, you know, took a semi-nonstick skillet. Mm-hmm. It was a little sticky, that one. And then you just kind of coat it. I usually coat it with a little bit of ghee or a little bit of oil. Not much, just like a little bit. And then you just pour it in the batter. So it's almost like the same idea as making a crepe. You don't want a lot. You don't want it as thick as a pancake. You just want a little bit. I usually kind of roll it around the pan. So it's a little bit more crepe size. And then... you know, what'll kind of actually happen is as it's kind of cooking down, it'll start to kind of crisp up around the edges, and then it'll start to get, like, these little holes in it.
Like pancakes, kind of.
Kind of like pancakes. It's like pancake bubbles, or, like, if you've ever made, like, injera, mm-hmm. it'll kind of, like, bubble up on top, but it's not bubbles. Like, it's, like, almost all the way through.
Yeah.
And so you'll kind of get these bubbles and crackles, and usually when it's about cooked, like, not quite cooked through, I like to add, I'll sprinkle sea salt, and then I'll take fresh cilantro and I'll put, like, a little bit of ghee in it, and I'll just, like, add a bunch of stuff and, like, sauteed onions and whatnot, and then I flip it. I make it kind of more like a dosa omelet, which some, I mean, a lot of them kind of come like that, like, with stuff in them.
Yeah, right. Like yeah. potatoes or
yeah.
other stuff, yeah.
Yeah, I kind of go really simple. I just kind of like shoving tons of cilantro in there. And
it was delicious, yeah. what you made at that ferment with that. That was beautiful.
Yeah. I did not get them as thin. So I actually blended the recipe that I used. I blended my red lentils separate from my brown rice.
Uh-huh.
And then I mixed it. I don't think you need to do that necessarily,
no.
though.
I throw mine all in one bowl. I don't know. As a fermenter in general, I'm not, like, super, I think, OCD about things. I just kind of go for it. And I don't worry about, like, I need to separate every last detail. And I just throw it all in one bowl. And I'm like, the time it's soaking is the same amount of time. It's not going to.
You say you deliberately ferment it for less amount of time. Why is that?
Just everything I have read up on dosa, it's like fermented for a little bit less time. So mm-hmm. I've just
for a cleaner flavor, less kind of.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you want a more tangy batter, like, let it go longer.
Yeah,
you
know, we let ours go.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. It was pretty stinky. I mean, in a good way. It wasn't stinky in a bad way, but it was.
That's why I'm asking.
It was
that's
pretty
why I'm bringing
pungent.
This up.
Yeah,
that's and great.
That's exactly what
I actually used. I had bought this spice, the seasoning pack from Trader Joe's, so I used their Zhoug, Zhoug, and it was a combination of coriander leaves, parsley, chili, garlic, cumin, cardamom,
ooh,
and cloves.
Yeah.
And it was good, and then I just served them with scrambled eggs. But it was so good, and now we're totally addicted to doses, and I want to eat them every day.
Yeah. Yep. Oh, I know, right? I made doses one morning. I made doses for breakfast that I had done with sprouted mung bean, and I had all this dosa batter. I mean, it had been sitting in my fridge for, like, 2 weeks, and so I was, like, extra, like, a little extra, like, not funky, but, like, just a little stanky, like, mm-hmm. in a, like, fermented-y kind of yummy way, and I made dosas, and I did a similar thing where I fried up eggs, and then I put that in there, and then I topped it with the kimchi, and then I topped it with this green Midori sriracha that somebody had given me for Christmas, and then
that's beautiful.
I just, I was just piling all this stuff in. I was like, oh my God, it's like a fermented breakfast taco. It's my dream come true. So good.
And it is easy, yeah. I mean, you do have to plan a little bit ahead. It is fermented. But, and it might, you know, it might, for those of you who are listening and interested, it sounds a little intimidating at first, but it really was very, very easy. I think my doses were a little thick. My brown rice didn't soak as long as I probably should have let it. So it was a little, it wasn't as smooth as I wanted, but it was still absolutely fantastically delicious. Yeah. And I'm going to start soaking more red lentils and brown rice tonight so we can have more doses. Yep.
Do it.
But it's really a great ferment, and we don't see it that much. I mean, you know, I've had doses a bunch of times in Indian restaurants, but I don't know anyone else who makes it at home, and it's really easy and delicious and good for you. I mean, lentils and brown rice, how could be better?
I love it. I love fermentation that's so accessible.
Yeah, you know? Totally.
We don't think it is. It seems so overwhelming and, like, scary and all these things, but it's like, no, I can just whip this up at home, and it costs, like, so little.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And it doesn't, I think the timing doesn't need, you can be a lot looser with the timing with something like a dosa or an idli. Yeah. You know, it doesn't have to ferment for 12 hours or whatever. You can be pretty loosey-goosey.
Yeah, you can be really loosey-goosey, which I think is one of my favorite things about it. It's like I can, you know, I've had ferments where I'm like, I'm going to push how long this can, like, go. mm-hmm. before it just gets too weird. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what's fantastic about it, is like you have this ability to do these shorter, faster ferments, and then you have this ability to do these kind of like longer drawn out.
Absolutely. And you had mentioned, but once the dough, once the batter is fermented, you can put it into the fridge for a week or two.
Yeah.
Because I think a lot of people don't necessarily know what they want to cook for breakfast tomorrow, but if they have the idea of doses, that they can start their ferment, but if tomorrow comes and they wake up late and it's okay, you just put the ferment in the refrigerator, slow down the fermentation, and it'll be fine for later.
So I want to go back to fermented cookie. What is a fermented cookie?
So I did this project for fermentation school. We all did like present a project, and so my whole thing was, I was like, I want to come up with a fermented cookie. I sous chef occasionally for a health foods coach, and one of her clients is a little kid with autism, and he's allergic to a ton of food. And so I was like, I was thinking about it, and I was like, what if I could come up with something, for this kid that, like, just in my mind, that I was like, that he could actually eat.
And it's kind of a kid food, right?
Just being like a kid and you're like going to birthday parties or to school or just, not really ever being able to really participate, I think, in the things around you. And being somebody with food intolerances and food allergies myself, being just kind of a little bit sensitive to that. And I don't know, it just got me thinking. I was like, well, what would you make for somebody like this who's allergic to freaking everything, So dairy and eggs and gluten and nuts and just so many things. And I don't know, so it just got me thinking about this idea of like, well, what if I came up with like a fermented cookie. I think having a nostalgic thing, my dad always made cookies for us as kids. Like, he's just really good at making cookies, and he has not yet figured out, I think, or attempted a way to do gluten-free cookies. But started experimenting. I was kind of inspired by injera at the time, and mm-hmm. just really loving injera. And so I kind of came up with this variation of like a fermented kind of teff based cookie that, was sugar free and egg free and dairy free and kind of free of like these, like, wasn't loaded with like almond flour, because if you're allergic to nuts, you can't have that. And, yeah. Just started kind of playing with a way to come up with something that was maybe more digestible and kind of food sensitive to, somebody like this kid. And hence the fermented cookies came about. And I did make them for the CSA in the fall. And I got multiple text messages that were like, I picked up the cookies. And by the time I got home, there were no more cookies.
Nice. That's fantastic.
So, yeah, they're pretty yummy. Like, it's interesting because you have to think about, like, usually in your baking, you make regular cookies. It's, like, dry. You have all these dry ingredients, and then you kind of add these, like, wet ingredients. And in the case of the fermented cookie, everything's already wet. So it was, like, how do I get rid of, the wetness without, like, I fermented all the flour. And then how do I, so it's kind of like a reverse cookie, scientifically.
Awesome. So if people want to find out more about Contraband Ferments, where should they go?
We have a website now that's in progress still, but it's contrabandferments.com. We're going to have videos. We have a blog up. We have some stuff starting to go on there. There's information about the fermentation CSA. And I do workshops all over the city, so I have a bunch of workshops coming up as well.
And those are listed on Contraband Ferments?
They will be up there this week.
Fantastic.
But yeah, we have some workshops upcoming at Pioneer Works in Red Hook. We're going to be doing something with Leffers Gardens Food Co-op. We're doing something with Mountain Coffee House, it sounds like.
Nice.
In June, a big collaborative thing. We have some other things in the works.
Cool. Stuff in the works.
Check out www.contrabandferments.com.
Yes. Cheryl Passwater, thank you so much.
Thank you.
For joining us on Ferment About.
Good night. Thanks for listening to this program on HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
You can find all of our archive programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.
Hey, are you hungry? Well, you're in luck. Meat & 3 is back for season 16. I'm Taylor Early, and we've got a whole new batch of reporters I am so excited to introduce you to.
Hi, I'm Elizabeth Fisher.
Asha McElroy.
Sam Girardi.
Jessica Gingrich.
Hannah from Wisconsin.
I'm a swing dancing audio engineer.
I am a future registered dietitian nutritionist.
I'm from New York, and I love rice and beans.
My favorite food of all time is a shrimp burrito.
I love watermelon.
We've also got a bonus podcast for you called Behind the Internship. Three of our reporters will take you along to show how they develop stories for this very show, Meat and Three.
Hi, I'm Danielle Flitter, a plant-based chef from Philadelphia, living in Mexico City.
I'm Sophia Hooper. I'm a bartender based in Portland, Maine.
My name is Addison Austin Liu. I am a chef and food journalist from Salt Lake City, Utah. And my favorite food is Peruvian.
Rice and beans.
Hand-drawn noodle soup.
So tune in to enjoy a square meal for your ears. And I hope you saved a little room for dessert.